from the Cyber Hub bunker in studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Do you trust me? Do you?
No, you need to verify first.
So, well, that's
I'm going to send you a code on Signal, and you have to tell me what the code is.
Let me know what it is. Is it going to come to my phone number? Because, you know, I could SIM swap, Chris, and then take over the app. Or I could steal the token from my laptop and pretend to be me. So how really safe is Signal? Has your world shattered yet?
No, not yet. I ensure that when I talk to folks on Signal and they swap phones, that I see that they're on a different device, and then I can question them on it.
I completely agree with that approach, by the way. You get the token has been renewed for this phone number is the classic thing. So, hey, everyone, happy Friday. Chris and I just got right into it. But this is how we kick off the show on a Friday morning. We're really grateful that you're taking time out of your Friday to be with us here. We're continuing our series on Zero Trust with Trust But Verify. And we're really excited about it. This has been a really fun series. Feedback's been great. And so, your comments matter. We want to answer your questions, you know, funny or not. Tackle us. If we're full of BS, then feel free to let us know. I don't think we know everything, but Trust But Verify to me is what the name of Zero Trust should have been. Right? It's noted historically throughout my 6 years of doing the show that I did not like the name Zero Trust. I think Zero Trust articulates a bad feeling for someone.
I think part of the problem is Zero Trust to many, like you can't really zero in on what you need to do about it. But if it was called Trust But Verify, then you can really segment in, okay, do we need to verify the network segments? Do we need to verify the application calls? Do we need to verify the user identities? Like, these are all the little things that make up Trust But Verify and truly the whole Zero Trust concept.
Yeah, so I'll agree with that. I think the Trust But Verify concept, though, requires a lot of work, right? There's an aspect of Trust But Verify where you can't always specifically implement it. And that's one of the struggles of adopting a Zero Trust type of strategy. So the Zero Trust type of strategy revolves around the idea that you really trust nothing and you're constantly validating and verifying. However, you've got to have an environment that supports that type of mentality. And that's that's easier said than done, especially in companies where you're potentially dealing with OT, legacy type of equipment, where the extra step of validation doesn't exist. You're really bolting it on, and then that cost and the business enablement side and the performance side suffer as a result.
Especially when you think about like OT equipment, like what sort of mechanisms can you put into something that was never really meant to be on the internet or to do that to verify itself? How do you install signatures for those machines so that they can verify that they really are what they say they are when you're trying to initiate a call with them?
Yeah, I mean, you're touching on, I think, what's a really, really interesting subject right now, right? Because if one thing we've seen over the last, 2 years is the war in Russia and the Ukraine, well, predominantly in the Ukraine, there's most of the Russians live normal. And by the way, most of the Ukrainians live normal unless you live on the border area between Russia and the Ukraine, right? But one aspect of that war that I think has been really undermined is the cyber warfare. And the cyber warfare between the Russian and the Ukrainians is below the belt pretty much from day one, right? It's been, I'm going to take out your grid. I'm going to take away your ability to have basic critical infrastructure. I'm going to go into your government offices. I'm going to use wiper malware, right? I would consider, you know, 2.5 years ago, Chris, or in 2020, if you and I were having a conversation and I said, wiper malware, a thing, would you use it? It'd be like a nuclear bomb, right? It'd be an equivalent of dropping a nuke or a chemical weapon or a biological weapon. It's one thing to hold my data at ransom. It's one thing to breach in and steal it. It's another thing to go in and maliciously delete a lifetime of data. That's crippling. But those happen all the time. And now over the last few weeks, we've seen how the Russians and the Ukrainians are going after each other's OT network, right? And some of those places have a zero trust philosophy. They're enacting zero trust as part of their, you know, since the beginning of the war, as part of their defenses. But they still there's a challenge with validating an OT command coming from an IT environment to an OT. So going from a control center through a switch to a PLC, an HMI, a turbine, or whatever, and getting it to actually do the action you want it to do. I think that's significant.
And I think the other challenge is, once you get wiped, have you really done the backup and restore processes as part of your incident response to restore your OT network and to get all your critical infrastructure back up and running? Because most of the times it was installed as a one-off at the time of creation. You have a custom generator with custom parts, and once those lose those settings, you have to go back and manually configure them all.
Yeah, and this is even greater in healthcare, right? Especially in more of the regional clinics where, you know, I'm not talking about major metropolitan hospitals, because I think they're a bit more resilient than some of the more regional, remote medical facilities that really don't use the kind of discipline of network segmentation on their IoT devices and OT devices, a heart monitor, a ultrasound machine. And you can really shut those down significantly. And then this kind of, you know, we're talking about all these problems, but the trust but verify principle, you know, I want to break it down first, and I want to show the pitfalls of it before we talk about the validations of it and start singing it fanfare, because it does miss the ball in a lot of industries where the handshake between the devices and the data exchange is very, very different.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, if you're looking for that handshake in logs and things like that, looking for anomalies, that's a challenge, because most of the times folks don't have the training needed to be able to look through the logs and to detect those anomalies. You having fun with your camera there, buddy? Oh, James is gone. Okay, so some other concepts with trust but verify is that continuous verification. So you're looking for that continuous handshake, that device certification, that user cookie that is really fingerprinted to that device. So if you attempted to steal that and put it on a different machine, it won't have the same characteristics. And therefore, the sensing mechanism can say, okay, well, that's not the same machine that it was issued for. Therefore, we're going to sever the connection and not trust it.
I missed everything you said, obviously, because I had technical difficulties. But I'm going to go ahead and agree with what you had to say. Yeah, continuous validation and verification. Yeah, I'll give you that. I apologize. Obviously, I'm not in studio because it's going through a remodel. And for some reason, my laptop decided to kill the screen I'm on. And that locked me out of everything that was on the screen and kind of did a hard reset. I don't know. Weird activity. And my XDR didn't jump up and say, all right, we've taken over your machine, right? That would have been really weird if you know, my endpoint detection and response software just jumped up there.
Well, maybe there's some anomalous activity there, and your XDR decided to shut you out because it doesn't trust you anymore.
Maybe, and I mean, you know, I'd give a shout out to my XDR provider for not trusting me anymore. I wouldn't trust me half the time, right? So there's that, you know. But really, kind of when we look at Trust But Verify, and we kind of move beyond, you know, the constant validation and verification, there's a piece to that I think really kind of plays into the Trust But Verify aspect, which is the trust aspect. You're inherently almost trusting something, but then you're saying, come on in, but let me validate it's you. Give you a prime example. I work with someone who's a very, very suspicious individual. A great guy, very suspicious individual. So I called him while he was on vacation, and I was like, hey, buddy, it's me. And he goes, yeah, remind me the last time I saw you in person, where were we? And I'm like, you know who I am. He goes, with deep fakes today, I saw your phone number pop up, but I just want to make sure it's you. So remind me, where was the last time you and I hung out together? And I had to go and answer that question for him. And then he asked me two other, he's like the ultimate, like, trust but verify type of person, right? I don't know who you, I hear your voice. It sounds familiar, but with deepfake technology today, you know what? I'm going to ask you a question that only you would know and a deepfake wouldn't.
And that's where user education and awareness becomes important in this aspect of Trust But Verify, because you have to be able to train your users that to expect the MFA when they're coming in, but don't expect the MFA if they're not doing something. So if they get an MFA prompt from Office and you're not doing anything in Office, don't accept that prompt. So know when to accept the prompt, when not to accept the prompt, and that's just part of the Trust But Verify approach.
Yeah, so I'm gonna I love that approach specifically. I think there's a prompt of, you have to look at controls, and one of the aspects of implementing a zero trust strategy is really making it smooth for user experience. Because one of the big reasons, whenever you're in a CISO in a room full of practitioners and you talk zero trust, they go, we're getting a lot of pushback from the business. A lot of pushback from the business. A few weeks ago, I was in the Big Apple at an event with, you know, about 30 of our peers. And then we were talking zero trust. The company who invited us there is a big zero trust type of leader in the industry. And, you know, and everyone was talking about pushback they get. And my answer was, well, how are you implementing it? Right? So if you do Trust But Verify, but then you never give any sort of inherent trust and you're constantly verifying, then you have to ask yourself a question of why people despise you and don't want it. Because if I got to go to my MFA app every time I want to do something, I hate you. That sucks. And the business entirety is going to push back. You have to know when you're going to want to verify. So the trust and verify, the aspect of zero trust that says trust but verify, there's an inherent aspect to the trust. You've got that. You need that trust, right? It's there. And then you've got to say, what action is someone taking? And then you've got to have your decision tree. Someone logging in, going to email, trust. Someone logging in, going to email, then going to SaaS application, normal behavior, trust. Someone now all of a sudden wanting to ask prod data. I'm a trust, but I'm a verify. All right, let me push up a prompt. You want to commit code? I'm probably going to verify, right? You're pushing stuff from dev to QA? We're going to verify. When you're doing specific things that have an impact on an environment that could be detrimental, you want to do that. Right, you got to be able to design zero trust. That's a word we don't often talk about as practitioners, especially, you know, to me, I'm a big on what are we designing today, right? What is it that we're designing? And then how are we designing it? What does that design doc look like? And you need to do that for almost every aspect of your environment, right? What's your firewall looks like? What does your VPN look like? What is your, you know, identity access management? How are you designing it, and how does that interact with the data? What's the assumed business risk? What's the risk the business is willing to take on? And then at the levels where the business is willing to take on that risk, design it to inherently tolerate that risk. And where the business says, we don't want to tolerate any risk here, that's where you really design it. You add those steps of validation and verification. You're doing continuous monitoring. You're kind of looking at specific things. You're really interconnecting that to your security operations center and your monitoring software, because you go, these are the areas where we don't want to take any risk. These are the areas where we're inherently accepting the risk. And so it doesn't mean we're going to leave them unattended. We're going to monitor them, but it's always going to be a P4 and not a P1.
Yeah.
Or a P3 and not a P1. But if I see something out of band here, then I'm probably going to want to go into a P1. And I want to kind of kick my operations team into gear.
Yeah. And some of the different areas that you can escalate your verification is when you do anything sensitive. So if you're, say you're a teller at a bank and you're doing normal transactions, great. But as soon as you have a high value transaction, now you want to double check that that is the right teller and that they are accessing the right account. For a regular user like yourself, if you're just doing email, that's great. But then if you're looking at a highly sensitive business document, then we might want to push in that prompt injection just to make sure that it's you, because now, if that's not something that you access on a regular basis, that might be a little sensitive.
Yeah, you want to be able to, one, look at a few of these things holistically, right? And then you got to look at it specifically based on the use case you're trying to get into. I completely agree with that. You got to know when you want to validate and verify someone. I think there's another aspect to this if we go another step deeper. Can you actually verify and validate someone on different environments? And this goes back to what we kicked off the show with. Right, the IT/OT environments, there's not always a way to validate a command coming is the right command. And this is specifically, if you think of what happened at the Ultimar water facility during the Super Bowl a few years ago, right, where attackers got into that SCADA system, they launched a command to add more fluoride and chlorine into the water, which would essentially poison, made a lot of people sick. And if you're using water to bathe your young children or even make a bottle for your kid, it could have, you know, seriously injured, potentially killed someone. If it wasn't for that one employee sitting there actually looking at the monitor going, yeah, something's happening here, this isn't right, I'm going to put a stop to it, and put a stop to it, that would have been there, right? And so while you inherently are always doing trust but verifying, you're building all those rules, that doesn't take away from the fact that you still need a human over there watching that action. Because where there's a will, there's a way. If you don't believe me, ask SolarWinds, ask Microsoft, ask Change Healthcare. They're all victims of crimes. Where there was a will, there was a way.
And that goes back to something that we were talking to before we kicked off the show, is network segmentation. Like, you want to segment your OT network separate from your IT networks. And then your not so sensitive IT networks from your highly sensitive IT networks. And your applications, they should get their own segments, because if they don't need to be talking to a database over here and a server over here, they shouldn't be on the same network. So if you can really segment them off and create like an enclave where they'll function, they'll do all the calls that they need to do, but they aren't able to talk to anything else, now you're getting into the good foundations of trust but verify.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's the foundation of trust but verify. There's the foundation of validation. There's the human aspect to all of this, which I think is often lost in translation, because we constantly refer to, at least in my brain, and I don't know if our listeners and viewers agree with this, let us know in the comments, right? Do are you thinking of the human aspect of zero trust, or has zero trust become so automated, so so automated and so computerized that we don't think of that human aspect that's still required. Like, even if you look at generative AI, right? I was speaking, you know, there's a few very big cybersecurity partners in our industry that have launched, you know, Microsoft's got Copilot, CrowdStrike has, I forgot what they call theirs. They've got their own AI, right? And Palo and so many others have kind of launched a sim AI.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them will admit this still doesn't replace your tier one analyst. It could help focus them. It could potentially reduce the noise, reduce friction, but it doesn't replace that tier one analyst. And that's significant because that still lets you know that you still need a human
in the loop.
Feel an eye there deep in it in order to really be successful doing it.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I was at a CISO dinner a couple nights ago, and one of the questions was around their child going to college and what should they learn? And they said, isn't everything going to be replaced by AI? And half the room said no, because AI is there to help augment their capabilities, but it's not meant to replace their capabilities. You still need that human in the loop to ensure that the actions that are being recommended or being done are what the business said they are, because AI, generative AI, computers, it's really just ones and zeros. And you put garbage in, you get garbage out. So you have to have that human in the loop to verify what's happening is what's supposed to be happening.
Right. And you've always got to validate it. And this is one of those things where I remember people saying, you know, we're going to lose so many jobs to AI. And I'll gladly fight you on that question today, because I think AI is going to create more jobs.
Yeah.
It's gonna take away the mundane, and it's gonna make the human brain really work. And I think we as humans excel when we're not doing an assembly line job of moving things from here to there, but rather we're looking and focusing at a problem. And by the way, that's where you see the greatest human interactions on the planet, at least in my opinion, right? Like, when I'm solving a problem and I've got a team around me and everyone's sitting down and there's that silence because everyone's thinking, and then we start to, you know, whiteboard and solve, and everyone's really going into their experiences. They're drawing into the stuff they've studied, they've learned, they've experienced, and they're bringing that to try to solve a problem. That to me is the height of humanity, right? That's there's love, and then there's problem solving. And when you have both, those are the two things that I think make humans humans, right? That emotion, that love, and then that camaraderie and problem solving that you see that really brings out the best in humans. And zero trust and subsequent pillar, trust but verify, is one of those, right? You've always got to have that human, that problem solving skill built into it. Otherwise, you're really setting yourself up for failure, right?
And some of that human skill comes into creating adaptive security policies, not just generic ones, but adaptive ones that will kind of create that layered approach of, okay, you could do this, but if you do this, then we're going to escalate it. If you do this again, we're going to escalate it. You do it again, you're going to get kicked off and re-verify. Or if you say log in on too many machines and we're only expecting you to be logged into to one or two devices like your cell phone and your laptop, and then you log into a third, that's a little suspicious. Let's make sure that all of these are within our IP segment or within an IP space of where we're expecting you to be, versus one in China and then two here.
I'm 100% in line of what you're saying, right? There's you've got to be able to do that. And then you've got to, again, segmentation, human pieces to it really all matter. And then finally, continuous improvement. Trust but verify is defined by continuous improvement. So where you set barriers, you've constantly got to review it. You can't write a policy. You can't implement something in a zero trust strategy, and specifically in Trust But Verify, and not look for consistent improvement in what you're trying to do. Otherwise, you fail miserably. And that failure has repercussions. Just saying it now. That failure has repercussions, and they're catastrophic when they happen if you don't continuously improve. Because understand something, a vulnerability, what is it? CISA said this, and I think Tenable said this, and a whole bunch of orgs have said this. From the moment a CVE is declared, 24 hours, there's an exploit. Within 24 hours, there's an exploit. Depending on the CVE, within 20 minutes, there's someone scanning for it. And I wrote on, I'm going to give myself a shameless plug here, Chris. So if you're okay with that, can I do a shameless plug?
Absolutely.
I just published my long-awaited article on the decentralized kill chain. And I really walk through in that article the whole idea of, from a moment of vulnerability is there to a moment there's scanning to an exploit. That time frame is 24 hours. 24 hours. We in 24 hours just look at the vulnerability. Here it happens again.
Well, while James is restarting his
there
machine,
it happens again.
There was recently a article published on the XY vulnerability, and they showed a timeline from when that zero day was found to it being patched to a CVE being created. And within 24 hours of that CVE being created, you have active exploits out in the wild. And sucks for practitioners that the CVE gets released on a Friday, and by Saturday there's active exploits out there and you haven't patched your environment. Because
or you get a bunch of CVEs on a patch Tuesday, there's 600 of them, and you've got 150 of them in your environment, and now you got to prioritize what you're patching, right? And everyone hates life because by Thursday you're exhausted. By Friday you're done for. Yeah, sorry, I'm having this issue. I'm going to have to figure out why this keeps happening. So I apologize that I interrupted the stream, but I know we're at time. So again, I published a long-awaited article, The Decentralized Kill Chain. It's available on my Substack, jamesazer.substack.com. You can go check it out there. You can read it. It's a good Saturday morning read. I won't lie to you. It's about an 11, 12-minute read, but it's good. I kind of highlight the whole aspects of the challenge of how cybercrime has really made us go into continuous improvement and requires us to do that. Chris, plug your thing, buddy.
I'd say in the age of AI and LLM, I just released a course for mastering LLMs. And what it does, it kind of goes through the history and the understanding of how LLMs are created so that you understand when you're doing prompt engineering, how it gets processed in the background and allows you to do better prompt engineering so that you can use your AI more efficiently. And that's available at cpf-coaching.com/mastering-LLMs. And I'll include the link when this goes live.
Awesome. So we are live now everywhere, but he'll put the link. The link will be in the show notes. Go check it out. I'll edit it into the show notes. Chris will send it to me here in a minute. And I'll edit it into the YouTube show notes so everyone can see it there, and into the audio podcast show notes as well. Thank you all for tuning in. Really appreciate y'all. I'll be back Monday, and then I'm going on Passover break. Monday night is Passover, first night of Passover, and I'll be taking a long-earned break. Chris will be filling in on a few of the days. I'm out next week, so check that out. Tune in 9 a.m. Eastern for all the latest while I'm out, and then I look forward to being back next Friday. We're gonna be, I'll be doing this hopefully poolside with you, Chris.
I'm looking forward to it. I wish I were poolside with you too. have a great weekend. And if you're listening to this live and you're in the Baltimore area, come up to B-Sides Charm. I'm giving a talk on creating cyber development workforce in a CI/CD fashion. Continuous improvement, continuous development. 5 p.m. B-side charm.
Go see Chris live if you can. All right, y'all. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great weekend and stay cyber safe, y'all.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.